Good evening, folks. It is 3 August, Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern. This is the Committee of Safety. Take it away.
Well, good evening, everybody. Tonight, we're going to continue on with our founding documents. We discussed the quote with Ronto, and that's important at so many levels, and you know, you've got to read these documents, and that's one. And the second most important document that we've ever put out is what we're going to discuss tonight, and that's the mandamus, which was the second document we put out. This one happens to be, you know, it says mandamus to sheriff, but it's really earmarked to all of the public officials that got all our mailings. And so that's what we're going to do now, and then at a later date we'll get into some skill sets on how to knock on the sheriff's door and get his attention and have a meeting with him. So anyway, without further ado, Nikki is going to regale us with the mandamus to the sheriff. Take it away, Nikki.
Okay. So here I am. I'm going to start with the reading of the mandamus, and this is from 2015, May 20th of 2015. And I'm not going to go too much into the footnotes except for explaining what a mandamus is and what a quorum nobis is. So, okay, I'm going to start reading from the top. You can find a link in the COS comments directly to this document as a PDF, or you can go ahead and follow the how to get there, which I put in there too about an hour or so ago. Okay, so if you go to the comments section in the COS, you'll be set to go, and you'll have it for future reference as well as for the footnotes. Okay, so I'm going to begin on page one, obviously. Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, and it's in Vahalia, New York. And this is an extraordinary judicial action that was filed via U.S. Postal Service in all 94 federal district courts and served upon all parties listed below by fax. All clerks are to perform their ministerial function under penalty of law, USC 18, section 2076, to file or deliver to the recipients listed below. Whoever intercepts, obstructs, or impedes will be prosecuted to the full extent of the law, and that is 18 USC section 1512B. This is a matter of national security, and it is expected that the recipients, being oath takers, read and understand the nature and gravity of the contents of these papers. This official judicial, This official judicial process executed by the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries concerning treason against the people of the United States of America in violation of the United States Constitution, Article 3, Section 3, Treason, 18 U.S.C. Section 2385, Advocating Overthrow of Government, 18 U.S.C. Section 2384, Seditious Conspiracy, 18 U.S.C. Section 2382, Misprison of Treason, 18 U.S.C. Section 2381, Treason, 18 U.S.C. Section 1349, Attempt and Conspiracy, 18 U.S.C. Section 1622, Subornation of Perjury, 18 U.S.C. 115, Treason, Sedition, and Subversive Activities, 18 U.S.C. Section 4, Misprison of Felony. The purpose of filing in all U.S. federal district courts is because of widespread failing to file 18 U.S.C. 2071. Article 4, Section 4, United States, the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. Via U.S. mail and fax for action, the United States Supreme Court, under penalty of law, clerk is to forward to all justices United States District Courts, 94 of them, under penalty of law, clerk is to forward to all judges and magistrates. This was served for action, via fax, for action to all state courts. And I'm not going to read all the information next to it. It's pretty much under penalty of law. It's going to be repetitive throughout. Clerk is to forward a copy to all judges and magistrates. United States congressmen, all 435, under penalty of law, copy goes to all congressmen from the clerk. United States senators, 100, the clerk is to file or forward to all senators. Assemblymen, all 50 states, the clerk is to make sure they get it. Senators, all 50 states, governors, all 50 states, all county sheriffs, that's 3,133 of them, federal special agents in charge, 94 of them, U.S. Marshals, 94, joint chiefs of staff, state militia, under penalty of law, clerk is to forward a copy to the highest ranking officers in the state militias. This was served via email, First Amendment duty to inform, news media. Under penalty of law, editors are to report or print a copy for the people. Could you mute out whoever's clearing their throat, please? Failure to do so will be considered aiding and abetting the enemy. So news reporters have got a function in all of this under the First Amendment. The document is not for interpretation by bar attorneys. Laws are made for men of ordinary understanding and should therefore be construed by the ordinary rules of common sense. Their meaning is not to be sought for in metaphysical subtleties. I don't use these words very often, by the way, which may make anything mean everything or nothing at pleasure. Thomas Jefferson to William Johnson in 1823 said, all respondents took an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution. Or he said all that that I just read, the quote, the laws are made for men and nothing or to make anything and everything or nothing at pleasure. And that's all in quotes, and that's Thomas Jefferson to William Johnson in 1823. All respondents took an oath to uphold and protect the Constitution and therefore should understand these documents, if not learn or resign your post. Please mute out whoever is coughing into the phone. The mandamuses went to all 50 United Common Law grand juries, and the following page, page 2, contains all the addresses for all the unified common law grand juries throughout the United States of America. And we get on page 3 is where we actually begin. And the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries in the United States District Courts for all districts, we the people, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries, Sureties for Peace, commanding county sheriffs, 3,133 of them, federal special agents in charge, 94, U.S. Marshals, 94, joint chiefs of staff, state militia, governors, all 50 states, all federal and state courts, assemblymen in all 50 states, senators, all 50 states, U.S. congressmen, 435, U.S. senators, 100, and news media, are the respondents. This was filed as number 1776-1789-2015. A quorum nobis is how it was filed. And a quorum nobis means before us ourselves, the king. That is, in the king's or queen's bench, applied to writs of error directed to another branch of the same court. For instance, from the full bench to the court at Nicephorus. And a citation is provided in the footnotes with that, and is entitled A Writ of Mandamus. And a mandamus in Latin means we command. This is the name of a writ, formerly a high prerogative writ, which issues from a court of superior jurisdiction and is directed to a private or municipal corporation or any of its officers, or to an executive, administrative, or judicial officer, or to an inferior court, commanding the performance of a particular act therein specified and belonging to his or their public official or ministerial duty, or directing the restoration of the complainant to rights or privileges of which he has been illegally deprived. And citations, again, are provided in the footnotes, which you have the links to in the comment section at COS. So this is a writ of mandamus to the county sheriff to inform and for immediate action. Could whoever is making noise please mute out? And this is line 20. The series of informations, orders, and writs by we the people filed in the United States Supreme Court of the United States District Courts, the State Supreme Courts, and served upon our elected and appointed servants when not acted upon forms an indictment against the same. We the people are exposing the foundational errors of our judicial system, errors founded on subversion and contempt of law by enemies past and present. It is expected that said servants and all recipients understand the subject matter. All servants and recipients have authority under the law and have taken an oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution. Today, these servants violate this sacred oath, and now lives have been destroyed and liberty hangs in the balance. Now, this is 2015 that this was written. This is already 2017. It's gone further, hasn't it? Silence when you have a duty to speak or act advocates the present conspiracy to overthrow the governments of the United States willfully and or knowingly. Warning, do not seek an attorney's interpretation that is not responsible for the oath you took concerning this information. Ignorance of the law or excuses that you were acting under advice of legal counsel will not be acceptable excuse, for there is nothing to interpret. The purpose of filing in all U.S. federal district courts is because of 18 U.S.C. 1961 through 1968, widespread RICO. 18 U.S. Code Section 2385, advocating overthrow of government, seditious conspiracy, 18 U.S.C. 2384, with widespread mutilating and failing to file 18 U.S.C. 2071. I'm going to skip the table of contents and go on to page 3. Page 3 begins with number 1, county sheriff is the conservator, it doesn't say is conservator of the peace. The purpose of this mandamus is to inform and educate and thereby empower sheriffs and marshals concerning their constitutional duties that liberty requires in order to flourish, without which America could not prevail. The county sheriff is a constitutional officer elected by the people, bound by oath as guardian of the people's unalienable rights secured by the Constitution. The United States Constitution is and its capstone Bill of Rights is the law of the land, and all statutes and state constitutions repugnant to the United States Constitution are null and void. If the sheriff is ignorant to the Constitution, which is common law, it would stand to reason that he is in violation of his oath, not comprehending when judges and politicians violate the common law and thereby technically are guilty of treason. The duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the sheriff cannot be diminished by those in the legislature, courts, and state constitutions. When it comes to enforcing the law, the U.S. Constitution, the sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer, answers to no one, not even the governor. Like any other elected official, the sheriff cannot be removed from office by another elected official. He can only be removed by the people at the ballot box, recall, or by indictment or presentment by a grand jury. The United States Supreme Court said, quote, the sheriff is the chief executive and administrative officer of a county chosen by popular election. His principal duties are in aid of the criminal and civil courts of record, common law courts, such as serving process, summoning juries, executing judgments, holding judicial sales, and the like. He is also the chief conservator of the peace within his territorial jurisdiction. End quote. President Ronald Reagan stressed the importance of the modern sheriff in his address to the National Sheriffs Association on June 21, 1984. He said, quote, thank you for standing up for this nation's dream of personal freedom under the rule of law. Thank you for standing against those who would transform that dream into a nightmare of wrongdoing and lawlessness. And thank you for your service to your communities, to your country, and to the cause of law and justice. End quote. The sheriff, being the chief law enforcement and law enforcer, The sheriff, being the chief law enforcement officer and highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected, is to secure the peace and answer to the people alone. Unlike the state police, who are code enforcement officers serving the state and answering to the governor, and city, town, and village police, who are also code enforcement officers serving the corporate municipalities and answering to commissioners and mayors, they have and all have a conflict of interest because they have no constitutional authority or concerns. They cannot serve the code and the Constitution. Whereas the sheriff reports directly to the people and not the corporation, the duties, responsibilities, and authorities of the county sheriff as a constitutional officer are, at a minimum, the same as they were when the state constitutions were originally written. If sheriffs and marshals need to consult a bar judge, bar attorney, or bureaucrat to know when they exceed their authority, it's no different than consulting with the fox concerning the hen house. If the sheriff cannot ascertain if a judge or any other government servant is abusing their powers and thereby violating the unalienable rights of the people without asking the fox how he can perform his duties, if a politician, judge, or prosecutor violates the Constitution, it is the duty of the sheriffs and marshals to call the grand jury and ask the people for an indictment. This is your responsibility. If you seek permission of a prosecutor or judge on any arrest, you shirk your authority, become a tool to the same, and thereby violate your oath. No politician can come between you, meaning the sheriff, this is written to the sheriff, and the people. Please mute out. Regardless of what you have been taught, it is the duty of the sheriff to seek an indictment, not the prosecutor. Prosecutor is called the grand jury when the state has an issue, but the people's business is the sheriff's business, and it is his duty to protect the same from those who would encroach upon their rights. Likewise, the courts exist to serve and protect the people from criminals and tyrants. Two, constitutional officer versus code enforcement officers. The principal challenges to the sheriff are code enforcement officers. excuse me, I need to be muted out, excuse me, codes, statutes that control the behavior of people are repugnant to the Constitution and are therefore null and void. The sheriff has a duty to uphold the Constitution. This poses a dilemma because the sheriff must obey the United States Supreme Court rulings and the United States Constitution in order to uphold his oath. He must first understand it. This is the purpose of this writ. Does the sheriff have the fortitude to keep his oath and uphold the common law, betray his oath, and therefore the people who have entrusted him as their constitutional law enforcer? Will he uphold the common law above the will of bar-driven legislators, judges, prosecutors, and their code enforcement officers who are true believers that statutes are above the Constitution? The treasonous bar school has been teaching codes and statutes as law for more than 50 years. If we fail to correct this error, America will be lost. We are a republican form of government guaranteed by U.S. Constitution Article 4, Section 4, which means rule by law and, in America's case, common law. When an organization like the bar advocates the overthrow of the Constitution, meaning common law, they are advocating the overthrow of our government in violation under 18 U.S.C. Section 2385. When a judge violates the Constitution and the sheriff seeks permission from the prosecutor to seek an indictment, and if the prosecutor refuses to indict and the sheriff submits to the will of the prosecutor, did not the sheriff break his oath and become part of the conspiracy to cover up a crime? Is this sheriff now guilty of felony rescue? When judges break the law, it is the duty of the sheriff to arrest a judge and go directly to the grand jury for an indictment. It is only recently, 50 or so years, that the sheriff has been unlawfully told he must first filter the crime through the bar-taught prosecutors who work for the state and not the people, and almost always refuse to bring the crime before the grand jury when a state official is involved. This is exactly why America is in a constitutional crisis. If we can educate the sheriff, we the people working with the sheriff can save America. Another obstacle the sheriffs must recognize is the puppet grand and trial juries. Because the juries are controlled by the foxes, i.e., the judges and prosecutors, the jurors, they are led to deliberate. Because the juries are controlled by the foxes, the jurors, they are led to deliberate by the all-controlling bar prosecutor. That's a little rough, that sentence, but go back and read it when you get a chance. They will first be instructed by the said prosecutor of the statutes they must follow, and thereby trumping the common law. And that's really what it boils down to, that sentence. This, of course, is jury tampering, and we will be setting our face against that soon. The dilemma for the sheriff is, what am I to do? The solution is simple. Take the case to the common law grand jury. Clearly, you cannot take it to the unlawful puppet jury controlled by the foxes. Lysander Spooner, in Trial by Jury, 1852, said, quote, any government that is its own judge of and determines authoritarian collectively for the people, what are its own powers over the people, is an absolute government, of course. It has all the powers that it chooses to exercise. There is no other, or at least no more accurate definition of despotism than this. On the other hand, any people that judge of and determine authoritatively for the government what are their own liberties against the government, of course retain all the liberties they wish to enjoy. And this is freedom. At least it is freedom to them, because although it may be theoretically imperfect, it nevertheless corresponds to their highest notions of freedom. End quote. We the people across America in every state of the Union are doing exactly that which we should have been doing all along since we discovered this truth through the United States Supreme Court decision, whereas in the 1992 case, U.S. versus Williams, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, made clear the law when he said, quote, because the grand jury is an institution separate from the courts, over whose functioning the courts do not preside, we think it clear that, as a general matter at least, no such supervisory judicial authority exists, and that the disclosure rule applied here exceeded the Tenth Circuit's authority. Rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constitutive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oaths of office, end quote. This is the authority by which we the people act and come with determination to put that fox back in the cage and save America. Now you know, and the question before you is, now remember, it's being written to the sheriff, are you going to continue feeding that fox and thereby participate in their treasonous acts against we the people of the United States of America, or will you develop a constitutional backbone through education and join we the people to bring law and order back into our courts and thereby our government and save America? Clearly, it takes fortitude for a people to step up, take control, and do the right thing for God, country, and your posterity. This is your duty. This is the moment in time in history that will define your integrity or your lack thereof. We the people under the unified United States common law grand jury have tolerated your inaction because, like us, we were once ignorant of the truth. We have woken to the hard realities and have decided to do the just thing for ourselves and our posterity. Now you know. Your choices are, 1, step up and do the right thing, 2, resign and pass this mandamus to your successor, or 3, prepare yourself to face this body in due time for treason. The U.S. Constitution is a common law document which in turn demands obedience to the common law. Article 6, paragraph of the U.S. Constitution reads, "The Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and judges in every state shall be bound thereby. Anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. Therefore, when there is a conflict between the law and statutes, the Constitution must prevail because statutes are not law unless we, the people, gave the legislators authority to write such law through the Constitution. This is Law 101. It does not get any more difficult than this. See Quo Warranto, filed November 10, 2014. How can a sheriff uphold the Constitution if he was never trained in constitutional law enforcement? We are sure that the sheriff and his deputies were trained in law, statutes and codes, enforcement techniques, and self-defense. If it is the sheriff's responsibility to make sure that his deputies know the Constitution so they can serve the people. When deputies violate the Constitution, even unknowingly, the sheriff is as guilty and responsible as his deputies. The sheriff is responsible for his entire county, including the court and the jail. If legislators, past or present, remove the constitutional sheriff's duties and replace any of these duties by entrusting them to code enforcement officers, we can be sure that the common law, Constitution, is not being applied in our courts, jails, and or counties. Code enforcement officers serve the government, not the people. If this is the case in your county, notify us, the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries, and all of 50 states have got their addresses on there for the Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries in that state. And we will start the process to return these duties back under its proper authority, the sheriff. 3. Sheriff's duty in the courts. Bailiffs must be sheriff's deputies, trained to understand their duties. They must be approachable by the people in order to report constitutional violations in the courthouse. They must have the fortitude to remove a judge from the bench when judges violate people's unalienable rights. Unalienable rights are given by God and cannot be trumped by legislators. If there is a conflict between the two in the common law must prevail. The following U.S. Supreme Court rulings, to offer just a few, should empower you to enforce the law, and common law grand juries will stand behind you. And I'm not going to read the citations. I'm just going to read the quotes, okay? You can go back and read the citations where they got these from if you'd like, and you know how to get there through the COS comments site. Okay. Quote, law of the land, due course of law, and due process of law are synonymous. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. The general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose, since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow and it imposes no duties, confers no right, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no acts performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as the statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it, end quote. New quote, every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institutions formed by his fellow man without his consent. And that gets into unconscionable and adhesive contracts, end quote. New quote, under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him, her, except as his, her conduct to others, leaving him, her, the sole judge as to all that affects himself or herself. New quote, statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common right and common reason are null and void. New quote, the assertion of federal rights when plainly and reasonably made is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. New quote, a state may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal constitution. End quotes. Section 4. Jurisdiction of the courts. Jurisdictions of the courts. Today, courts are de facto operating contrary to common law under the rules of chancery and not common law. Bailiffs, being the sheriff's deputies trained to understand their duties, must make sure courts operate according to law. There are only two courts, we the people ordained to operate on the said land under the Constitution called Law and Equity, as we read, U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, quote, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States and treaties made of which shall be made under their authority. End quote. Courts of equity. These courts are the jurisdiction where judges hear and decide commercial contract cases and other disputes, whereas there exists only one jurist called the judge, who is bound by the aforesaid Article 6 law of the land. Equity court cases can be appealed to higher courts. And B of this is courts of law. These courts are the jurisdiction where juries tribunal hear and decide all criminal cases and commercial cases and other disputes, if so demanded by one of the parties. All criminal courts are called courts of record, which proceed under common law. In a trial by jury, the judge is to act as administrator and can make no rulings. If he does make a ruling, he acts under color of law, which is a crime. Under the Constitution, this is called bad behavior. Such a judge should be removed from the bench by the bailiff immediately and brought before the grand jury for indictment. Bill of Rights, Amendment 7. In suits at common law where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury, not a jury trial now, this is a trial by jury, shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. So once a person has a trial by jury, all other courts that hear that case needs to use the rules of common law. U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 1, the judges, both of supreme and inferior courts, shall hold their offices during good behavior. The requirements for a criminal case to proceed are as follows. 1. There must be an injured party. Quote, corpus delicti, the body of a crime. The body, material substance upon which a crime had been committed, for instance, the corpse of a murdered man, the charred remains of a house burnt down. In a derivative sense, the substance or foundation of a crime, the substantial fact that crime has been committed. That's sometimes called corporeal, I believe, too, as opposed to incorporeal, where you can't see it. For crime to exist, another quote here, for crime to exist, there must be an injured party. There can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of this exercise of constitutional rights. 2. There must be an indictment by an unfettered, not controlled by judge or prosecutor, grand jury. If there is no indictment, a person cannot be held to answer. U.S. Constitution Amendment 5 furthermore says, and this quote, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, and that is a crime that requires a prison sentence, unless on the presentment or indictment of a grand jury. 3. All decisions in a court of record are by the jury alone called a tribunal without any interference from a judge. Definition of a court of record is, quote, a judicial tribunal having attributes and exercising functions independently of the person of the magistrate judge designated generally to hold proceedings according to the course of common law. Its acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for perpetual memory and testimony. Has power to fine or imprison for contempt, generally possesses a seal. And that is a definition of a court of record. Has power to fine or imprison for contempt and generally possesses a seal. C. Judicial process. Warrants. The Bill of Rights, Amendment 5, provides that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, as supported by the following U.S. Supreme Court rulings. Quote, no man shall be deprived of his property without being heard in his own defense. And that's Kinney versus Beverly. Quote, Amendment 5 of the Constitution of the United States provides, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. A similar provision exists in all the state constitutions. The phrases due course of law and law of the land are sometimes used, but all three of these phrases have the same meaning, and that applies conformity with the ancient and customary laws of the English people or laws indicated by Parliament. And that's Davison versus New Orleans. Therefore, no warrant is to be executed by a sheriff without a wet ink signature of a judge. A rubber stamp or a clerk's signature is not sufficient. Let me read that again. No warrant is to be executed by a sheriff without a wet ink signature of a judge. A rubber stamp or clerk's signature is not sufficient. That is line 295 of this document. No legal instrument has executional powers without a signature and must be accompanied with a sworn affidavit. This includes federal liens and IRS liens. A notice of lien or notice of levy is not due process according to the Bill of Rights. Amendment 4. quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Next is the habeas corpus, end quote there. Habeas corpus, that great writ of liberty, the great writ of liberty. In the early days, habeas corpus was not connected with the idea of liberty. It was a useful device in a struggle for control between common law and equity courts. By the middle of the 15th century, the issue of habeas corpus, together with privilege, was a well-established way to remove a cause from an inferior court where the defendant could show some special connection with one of the central courts which entitled him to have his case tried there. In the early 17th century, the Five Knights case involved the clash, and the citation is in the footnotes there, involved the clash between the Stuart claims of prerogative and the common law, and was, in the words of one of the judges, the greatest, quote, the greatest cause that I ever knew in this court. End quote. Over the centuries, the writ became a viable bulwark between the powers of government and the rights of the people in both England and the United States. In the United States, habeas corpus exists in two forms, common law and statutory. The Constitution for the United States of America acknowledges the people's right to the common law of England as it was in 1789. What is that common law? It does not consist of absolute, fixed, and inflexible rules, but broad and comprehensive principles based on justice, reason, and common sense. The Constitution for the United States of America mandates that the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. Habeas corpus is the case in law that is proceeding according to the common law in a court of record. Therefore, it is the grand jury, as arbiter that shall be the enforcer of the law, whereas we read, quote, if any of our civil servants shall have transgressed against any of the people in any respect, and they shall ask us to cause that error to be amended without delay, or shall have broken some one of the articles of peace and secure or security, and their transgression shall have been shown by four jurors of the aforesaid 25, and if those four jurors are unable to settle the transgression, they shall come to the 25, showing to the grand jury the error which shall be enforced by the law of the land. Magna Carta, June 15th, A.D., 1215, number 61. Article 4, Section 4 guarantees a republican form of government against domestic violence when a judge enforces acts beyond his authority under color of law. Judicial immunity is lost. It is nothing less than lawless violence. Likewise, legislative jurisdiction that is not authorized by the United States Constitution is as inoperative as though it had never been passed. The judges proceeding without jurisdiction are indictable for treason. Judges are expected to know the law. No state can deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. Any court that ignores due process is not a common law court. Such an action proves a court unlawful and consequently has no legal authority over the petitioner without his consent. Confirmatio Karcharam. Quote, sovereign people shall not be taken or imprisoned or deceased or outlawed or exiled or anywise destroyed, but by lawful judgment of his peers or by the right of the land. And that's the Magna Carta, chapter 39, sometimes 29. No person, continue the, or another quote, no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, due course of law. This phrase is synonymous with the due process of law or law of the land and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice, that is, courts of record. Law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice, courts of record, is due process. That's Leeper versus Texas, and the former was Kansas Pacific Railroad, it looks like, versus Dunmire. Some have argued that the people have relinquished sovereignty through various contractual devices in which rights were not expressly reserved. However, that cannot hold because rights are inalienable. The people retain all rights of sovereignty at all times. The exercise of sovereignty by the people is further clarified when one considers that the constitutional government agencies have no genuine sovereign power of their own, but must rely upon such authority as is granted by the people. In the 1930s in New York, the judiciary and the bar pressed for a constitutional convention endeavoring to eliminate the unalienable right of habeas corpus among other issues. The people were so concerned about the attack on their liberty that instead of abolishing habeas corpus, the people wrote in and approved overwhelmingly Section 4, the privilege of a writ or order of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, amended by Constitutional Convention of 1938 and approved by vote of the people November 8, 1938. When our founders debated the Constitution, they included habeas corpus as a remedy against evil, as we read in the Federalist Papers, number 83 and 84, Hamilton to the people of the state of New York, quote, the trial by jury in criminal cases aided by the Habeas Corpus Act seems, therefore, to be alone concerned in the question, and both of these are provided for in the most ample manner in the plan of the convention. Quote, the creation of crimes after the commission of a fact, or in other words, the subjecting of men to punishment for things which, when they were done, were breaches of no law and the practice of arbitrary imprisonment, have been in all ages the favorite and most formidable instruments of tyranny. The observations of the judicious Blackstone in reference to the latter are well worthy of recital. Quoting Blackstone, to bereave a man of life or by violence to confiscate his estate without accusation or trial would be so gross and notorious an act of despotism as must at once convey the alarm of tyranny throughout the whole nation. But confinement of a person by secretly hurrying him to jail where his sufferings are unknown or forgotten is a less public, a less striking, and therefore a more dangerous engine of arbitrary government. And as a remedy for this fatal evil, he is everywhere peculiarly empathetical in his encomiums on the Habeas Corpus Act, which in one place he calls the bulwark of British Constitution. Thus we read Article 1, Section 9, Paragraph 2, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. Title 28 of the United States Code acknowledges that it is not the responsibility of the petitioner to know by what claim or authority the state acts, but that the petitioner may inquire as to the cause of the restraint by habeas corpus. 28 U.S.C. 2243, a court, justice or judge, tribunal entertaining an application for a writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ or issue an order directing the respondents to show cause why the writ should not be granted. When the persons holding the prisoner neglect to answer said habeas corpus, then the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, Rule 55, activates, and the prisoner must be released under the entry of default, whereas we read, quote, when a party against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought has failed to plead or otherwise defend as provided by these rules, and that fact is made to appear by affidavit or otherwise under seal, the clerk shall enter the party's default. End quote. 18 U.S.C. 2071, A, whoever willfully and unlawfully removes or conceals a proceeding filed or deposited with any clerk or officer of any court of the United States or in any public office or with any judicial or public officer of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. B, whoever having the custody of such proceeding willfully and unlawfully conceals shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both, and shall forfeit his office and be disqualified from holding any office under the United States. Habeas corpus is a judicial process not open for debate. If the prisoner is not released, the party that continues to restrain the prisoner would be guilty of false imprisonment and kidnapping. The arrest of said perpetrators is the appropriate action by the sheriff, and the said perpetrators are to be brought before the grand jury for indictment. Court filing. If a clerk refuses to file any legal document, the clerk commits a crime as per the following law, 18 U.S.C. 2076. Quote, whoever, being a clerk of a district court of the United States, willfully refuses or neglects to make or forward any report, certificate, statement, or document as required by law, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 1 year or both. If a clerk, end quote, if a clerk, judge, or anyone conceals, removes, or mutilates any document filed within the court, that person commits a crime as per the following law, and the sheriff is duty-bound to arrest him. And that's 18 U.S.C. 2071. Quote, concealment, removal, or mutilation generally, A, whoever willfully and unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, or destroys or attempts to do so or with intent to do so, takes and carries away any record, proceeding, map, book, paper, document, or other thing filed or deposited with any clerk or officer of the court of the United States or in any public office or with any judicial or public office officer of the United States shall be...
Because the fucking AC does not work, you idiot!
You want to mute, please?
God, don't fucking come in here! I told you this all the fucking time!
Can you mute, please? Or with any judicial or public officer of the United States shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both. B, whoever having the custody of such record, proceeding, map, book, document, paper, or other thing willfully or unlawfully conceals, removes, mutilates, obliterates, falsifies, or destroys the same shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 3 years or both, and shall forfeit forfeit his office and be disqualified from holding any office under the United States. As used in this subsection, the term office does not include the office held by any person as a retired officer of the Armed Forces of the United States. End quote. E, right to counsel by non-bar members. Often in criminal courts, when people desire to speak for themselves or have assistance of counsel that are not bar members, judges reject and resist any moves in that direction. Judges continue to force bar lawyers that were taught in their bar schools to never bring common law into the courts. If they do, the bar judge and the bar prosecutor would report them, and they would lose their bar license and be barred from the court. If the victim continues to resist, the judge may incarcerate the victim for contempt or order a competency test and then force a bar attorney on their victim. Sheriffs and deputies fail to realize that the judge is violating their victim's unalienable right protected by the Sixth Amendment. If the sheriff does nothing, he is compliant to the conspiracy. Bill of Rights, Amendment 6, right to have assistance of counsel. Quote, the practice of law cannot be licensed by any state. Quote again, another quote, the practice of law is an occupational of common right. I think that probably should be occupation of common right. Quote, litigants can be assisted by unlicensed laymen during judicial proceedings. That's Brotherhood of Trainmen versus Virginia. F, America runs on fiction of law. All attorneys and judges are bar taught. The courts operate under the rules of chancery and not the rules of common law. It's 10 o'clock. Shall I go on to page 22? I'm on page 13 now. Can I have a motion for this? Shall I keep on going? John? Robert? Or you want to finish it next week? I'll keep on reading. Okay, all attorneys and judges are bar taught. The courts operate under the rules of chancery and not the rules of common law. Our founding fathers rejected chancery and did not include it in the Constitution, and it is in direct conflict with common law, whereas we read U.S. Constitution, Article 3, Section 2, quote, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution. Therefore, most of our courts are running on fiction and not law. Fiction of law, as it's defined in Ryan versus Motor Credit Company. Okay, is defined as something known to be false is assumed to be true. That's fiction of law. That statutes which would deprive a citizen of rights of person or property without a regular trial according to the course and usage of common law would not be the law of the land. That's Hope versus Henderson. Our elected servants are out of control, and America is operating under fiction of law. And I might add, they're getting paid with something other than constitutional coin, Article 1, Section 10 coin. So I'm going to read this again. Our elected servants are out of control, and America is operating under fiction of law. It is the duty of the sheriff working with the people, if necessary, to protect the unalienable rights of the people by simply enforcing the aforesaid laws, and only then will America run on the law again. Thomas Jefferson said, quote, if a nation expects to be ignorant and free in a state of civilization, it expects what never was and never will be, end quote. Sheriffs took an oath to uphold and defend the Constitution, but if they don't know the Constitution, how can they uphold and defend it? Sheriffs need to learn the common law and teach it to their deputies or resign their position. G, Only the people can save America, and it is the sheriff's duty to lawfully protect and serve the people. Only when we, the people, rise up to stand against tyrants in our government will we be able to return to our former state under common law. And in order to accomplish that, all of us must first be educated in the law. This has been the challenge of this body. We are a national movement, the NLA he's talking about here, with a presence in every state, with a desire of returning to... listening to this, or if you're reading this. If we are going to save America or lose it to fascism, quote, educate, Thomas Jefferson said, educate and inform the whole mass of people. They are the only sure reliance for the preservation of our liberty. It's a systemic thing. And that's me adding that. Thomas Jefferson said again, I know no safe depository of the ultimate powers of the society but the people themselves. And if we think them not enlightened enough to exercise their control with a wholesome discretion, the remedy is not to take it from them, but to inform their discretion by education. This is the true corrective of abusive of constitutional powers. Education. Thomas Jefferson also said, an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. Self-government is not possible unless the citizens are educated sufficiently to enable them to exercise oversight. It is therefore imperative that the nation see to it that a suitable education be provided for all of its citizens. For all its citizens. H. The power of the grand jury. In a stunning 6-3 decision, Justice Antonin Scalia, writing for the majority in the 1992 case United States versus William, confirming that, quote, the American grand jury is neither part of the judicial, executive, nor legislative branches of government, but instead belongs to the people. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government governed and administered directly by and on behalf of the American people, and its authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. Justice Anton Scalia went on to say, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory is its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of buffer or referee between government and the people. The common law of the Fifth Amendment demands a traditional functioning grand jury. It is, in effect, a fourth branch of government governed and administered to directly by and on behalf of the American people, and this authority emanates from the Bill of Rights. The grand jury requires no authorization from its constituting court to initiate an investigation, and in its day-to-day functioning, the grand jury generally operates without the interference of a presiding judge and deliberates in total secrecy. We have insisted that the grand jury remain free to pursue its investigations unhindered by external influence or supervision, so long as it does not trench upon the legitimate rights of any witness called before it. Recognizing this tradition of independence, we have said that the Fifth Amendment's constitutional guarantee presupposes an investigative body acting independently of either prosecuting attorney or judge. And again, that is worthy of repeat, United States versus Williams. And it is under that authority and the preamble in the Declaration of Independence being the sureties of peace that we act, whereas we read that whenever any form of government becomes destructive to these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. And that's typically, just to add here, that's typically in every constitution, a state constitution. There's something to that effect, usually in Article 1. Going on with the mandamus, the governments of the United States belong to we the people and not these tyrants that fleece us daily of our in our own courts, of which that they seize control of. 5. Sheriff's duty in the jail. The sheriff is responsible for the lawful implementation of the county correctional facility and is therefore liable for any unlawful detention. Simply stated, an unlawful detention would be anyone held without a presentment or indictment by a grand jury, unless, of course, for a violent act being held for indictment of a grand jury, and then brought before the court of law to answer. This is the people's unalienable right protected by the Fifth Amendment. Quote, law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice is due process. Leeper versus Texas. Quote, by the law of the land is more clearly intended the general law, a law which hears before it condemns, which proceeds upon inquiry and renders judgment only after trial. Dartmouth College case for something or another. Bill of Rights, Amendment 5. Quote, no person shall be held to answer for a crime unless on the presentment or indictment of a grand jury, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. Quote, due course of law, this phrase is synonymous with due process of law or law of the land and means law in its regular course of administration through courts of justice. Kansas Pacific Railroad again versus Dunmire. All federal and state courts are courts of record. If declared in the state constitution, county courts are courts of record and proceed according to the common law. All city, town, and village courts are not courts of record and proceed according to statutes and not the Constitution, thereby violating due process and therefore do not have the power to fine or incarcerate. There are few exceptions, whereas New York City courts, as per the New York State Constitution, are courts of record and therefore are to proceed according to the common law. Quote, courts of record and courts not of record, the former being those whose acts and judicial proceedings are enrolled or recorded for the perpetual memory and testimony and which have power to fine or imprison for contempt, error lies to their judgments, and they generally possess a seal. Courts not of record are those of inferior dignity which have no power to fine or imprison and in which the proceedings are not enrolled or recorded. Quote, the decisions of a superior court may only be challenged in a court of appeal. The decisions of an inferior court are subject to collateral attack. In other words, in a superior court, one may sue an inferior court directly rather than resort to appeal to an appellate court. Decisions of a court of record may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. Decisions of a court of record, I'll repeat that, may not be appealed. It is binding on all other courts. However, no statutory or constitutional court, whether it be an appellate or Supreme Court, can second-guess the judgment of a court of record. The judgment of a court of record whose jurisdiction is final is as conclusive as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the fact but deciding it. The Schlickenloth versus Bustamante, 1973. It is imperative that sheriffs know the difference between courts of records and courts not of record, because courts not of record cannot incarcerate. Courts not of record cannot incarcerate. And if a sheriff incarcerates someone held or tried in a court not of record, that sheriff participates in a crime by violating a person's unalienable right of due process protected by the Fourth and Fifth Amendment. Bill of Rights, Amendment 4. Quote, the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall be issued but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Bill of Rights, Amendment 5. Quote, no person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on a presentment or indictment by a grand jury. We realize this is a major problem considering that court jails are filled with people tried in courts not of record. Some of these people may be guilty of a crime, and we the people, through grand jury and trial juries, will endeavor to solve these problems as soon as we are able to access the courts. Nevertheless, sheriffs cannot continue to receive prisoners that were tried in courts not of record. If the sheriff believes that some of the accused are guilty of a crime, he will need to bring the issue to a grand jury for indictment to be tried in a court of record. The following U.S. Supreme Court rulings, being common law, provides our point. Right to travel. Quote, the right of a citizen to travel upon the public highways and to transport his property thereon, either by carriage or by automobile, is not a mere privilege which a city may prohibit or permit at will, but a common right which he has under the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Thompson versus Smith. Quote, undoubtedly, the right of locomotion, the right to remove one place from one place to another according to inclination, is an attribute of personal liberty, and the right ordinarily of free transit from or through the territory of any state is the right secured by the 14th Amendment and by other provisions in the Constitution. Shachtman versus Dulles. Quote, the claim and exercise of a constitutional right cannot be converted into a crime. Miller versus the U.S. Quote, there can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of constitution rights. Scherer versus Cullen, 1973 that was. Quote, we find it intolerable that one constitutional right should have to be surrendered in order to assert another. Simmons versus U.S., 1968. Quote, where rights are secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rule-making or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. Bill of Rights, Amendment 2. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Quote, the general rule is that an unconstitutional statute, though having the form and name of law, is in reality no law, but is wholly void and ineffective for any purpose since its unconstitutionality dates from the time of its enactment. In legal contemplation, it is as inoperative as if it had never been passed. Since an unconstitutional law is void, the general principles follow that it imposes no duties, confers no right, creates no office, bestows no power or authority on anyone, affords no protection, and justifies no act performed under it. A void act cannot be legally consistent with a valid one. An unconstitutional law cannot operate to supersede any existing law. Indeed, insofar as a statute runs counter to the fundamental law of the land, the Constitution, it is superseded thereby. No one is bound to obey an unconstitutional law, and no courts are bound to enforce it. That's Bennett versus Valier and Norton versus Shelby County. Quote, every man is independent of all laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any institutions formed by his fellow man without his consent. Cruden versus Neal, 1796. Quote, under our system of government, upon the individuality and the intelligence of the citizen, the state does not claim to control him, her, except as his, her conduct to others, leaving him, her, the sole judge as to all that affects himself, herself. Mugler versus Kansas. Statutes that violate, another quote here, statutes that violate the plain and obvious principles of common law and common reason are null and void. Bennett versus Boggs. The assertion of federal rights, the assertion of federal rights when plainly and reasonably made is not to be defeated under the name of local practice. Davis versus Wechsler. Quote, a state may not impose a charge for the enjoyment of a right granted by the federal constitution. Murdoch versus Pennsylvania. Quote, the state cannot diminish rights of the people. Hurtado versus California. Quote, there can be no sanction or penalty imposed upon one because of his exercise of constitutional rights. Scherer versus Colon. Quote, those things which are considered as inalienable rights which all citizens possess cannot be licensed since those acts are not held to be privileged. City of Chicago versus Collins. Quote, constitutional rights would be of little value if they could be indirectly denied. Gomillion versus Lightfoot, 1966, cited also in Smith versus Allwright. Quote, we find it intolerable that one constitutional right should have to be surrendered in order to assert another. Simmons versus U.S., 1968. Quote, where rights are secured by the Constitution and are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Again, Miranda versus Arizona. Quote, if the state converts a liberty into a privilege, the citizen can engage in the right with impunity. Shuttlesworth versus Birmingham. Quote, sovereignty itself is, of course, not subject to law, for it is the author and source of law. But in our system, while sovereign powers are delegated to the agencies of government, sovereignty itself remains with the people, by whom and for whom all government exists and acts, and the law is the definition of the limitation of power. For the very idea that man may be compelled to hold his life or the means of living, or any material right essential to the enjoyment of life, at the mere will of another, seems to be intolerable in any country where freedom prevails, as being the essence of slavery itself. Yickwo versus Hopkins. 6. Sheriff's duty in the county. The sheriff, being a chief executive, administrative, chief law enforcement officer, CLEO, and highest peace officer of the entire county in which he was elected, has the absolute authority to arrest even the governor or judge and then call the grand jury directly for an indictment. A sheriff need not get permission from the district attorney. The sheriff also has the authority and duty to secure liberty and the peace within the county, as if necessary, and if necessary, call the posse comitatus to assist. The challenge to the sheriff today is from forces within our federal government that is unlawfully moving forward to martial law in order to disarm the American people. The only purpose for martial law is to control a captured population. They're getting paid with a coin that is contrary. We are an occupied nation. Just throwing that in. We, the people, have not given authority to the three branches of government to declare martial law. To have done so would be self-destruction. Any attempt by Congress or the executive to use military forces, foreign or domestic, against the people to bring them under martial law is an act of treason, war against the people, and we the people will be dependent upon the sheriffs within our counties to secure the peace by any means necessary, seeing that Congress has been negligent in providing for the militia. Therefore, in times of emergency, the only constitutional authority to keep the peace during an invasion is posse comitatus under the Second Amendment, whereas our sheriff is to call upon we the people of the counties to secure the peace. Federal agents and foreign troops on state soil would be repugnant to our Constitution and act of war. Posse comitatus defined, quote, the power or force of the county, the entire population of a county above the age of 15, which a sheriff may summon to his assistance in certain cases as to aid him in keeping the peace, in pursuing and arresting felons, etc. The Bill of Rights Amendment 2 states, quote, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state shall not be infringed. U.S. Constitution, Section 8, Paragraph 16, quote, to provide for organizing, arming, and disciplining the militia and for governing such part of them as may be employed in the service of the United States, reserving to the states respectively the appointments of the officers and the authority of training the militia according to the discipline prescribed by Congress. 7. U.S. Marshal. The power, authority, and duty of a U.S. Marshal is similar to that of a county sheriff in that he is the constitutional officer having the power and authority to arrest judges that violate the unalienable rights of the people. One marshal is appointed for each of the 94 federal districts by the president. The marshal's power are defined by constitutional authority under the Judiciary Act of 1789. He serves for a term of 4 years, takes an oath of office, has the power to appoint deputies, and shall produce a bond. His duties, like a sheriff, are to attend the district and circuit courts, execute throughout the districts all lawful precepts directed to him, deliver writs, summons jurors, secure an impartial trial, execute warrants, and is responsible for retaining, delivering, and transporting prisoners in his custody as directed by the court. Once the marshal is appointed, he can only be removed from the office by the people, grand jury, for bad behavior. Quote, the power of appointing the person nominated are political powers to be exercised by the president according to his own discretion. When he has made an appointment, he has exercised his whole power, and his discretion has been completely applied to the case. The appointment cannot be annihilated, and consequently, if the officer is by law not removable at the will of the president, the rights he has acquired are protected by law, by the law. Marbury versus Madison, 1803. Marshals take an oath of office swearing to faithfully execute all lawful precepts. Thereby, he must execute all the lawful orders of the court. Marshals are constitutional judicial officers and therefore, like the sheriff, are to execute only the law of the land and protect the people's due process. Failure to do so puts them in bad behavior and therefore they can be removed from office by the people, the grand jury. When federal SWAT teams in the middle of the night knock down doors, terrifying families and sometimes killing people, even children and pets, because of a federal lien or because they are a liberty group member interested in restating the Constitution and thereby a threat to some federal agency that is breaking the law, it is the marshal's duty to prevent such Gestapo abuse of power. For the marshal to allow this abuse is felony rescue, and the sheriff is now duty-bound to arrest all parties involved. The common law grand jury is on high alert concerning such abuse and will be seeking indictments across the nation. Marshals, like sheriffs, are guardians of the Constitution, thereby duty-bound to protect the due process of anyone standing before the court, as much as they are bound to execute all lawful orders of the court. Due process requires a presentment or indictment of an impartial grand jury for all criminal cases. Therefore, juries decide if the law is just or should be applied concerning the case at hand, and any interference with that jury's prerogative is jury tampering and thereby a denial of due process. If a judge or prosecutor addresses the jury to persuade in the law, the jury is no longer impartial and that judge or prosecutor is guilty of jury tampering. Quote, the Constitutions of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionary executives and legislative, and deciding by a jury of themselves, both fact and law, in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved, or they may ask by representatives freely and equally chosen. That is their right and duty to be at all, it is their right and duty to be at all times armed to freedom of person, freedom of religion, freedom of property, and freedom of the press. Thomas Jefferson, letter to John Cartwright, June 5, 1824. Nullification of law. A series of resolutions drawn up by Jefferson and adopted by the legislature of Kentucky in 1799, protesting against the Alien and Sedition Laws, declaring their illegality, announcing the strict constructionist theory of the federal government, and declaring nullification to be the rightful remedy, Kentucky Resolutions. 8. This is the conclusion. We're down to the wire here. The lawful path. The sheriff is the people's last line of defense. The American sheriffs must educate themselves on the aforesaid duties and work with the awakened people across America to enforce the law and arrest and indictments. Only then can we save America from the tyrants that are destroying our American way of life, replacing law with fiction. If the sheriff is unsure of his duties, he can call upon the jury administrators once they are seated in the courts, and until that time, you can fax your concerns to this common law grand jury at the number above, and we will answer your concerns with the necessary law that will empower you. The fate of America literally rests in you doing the just thing, talking to the sheriffs. Wherefore, the unified common law grand jury, stewards of the common law on behalf of the people and in the interest of justice, ordered all federal agents, FBI, U.S. Marshals, state, city, town, and village code enforcement officers are subservient to the county sheriffs. Being the only elected law enforcement officer, he is the chief law enforcement officer and highest peace officer in the entire county in which he was elected to secure the peace. In all emergencies and in a state of emergency, the sheriffs are the chief law enforcement officers with the powers of posse comitatus. To resist the power of the sheriff during a state of emergency is to resist the people and therefore an act of sedition. Ordered, in a state of emergency, all sheriffs shall perform their sworn duty to preserve, protect, defend the Constitution for the United States of America, protect the people of the county, private property, and all assets of the county. The sheriff alone is responsible to maintain law and order in the county and to work with other county sheriffs across the state and across the nation to do the same. If the sheriff permits the suspension of the U.S. Constitution in his county, liberty will be lost forever. The sheriff, too, wars against the people. Ordered, all sheriffs and marshals have received free copies of the Constitution and common law handbooks from the Unified Common Law Grand Jury in their states. Additional copies can be ordered at nationallibertyalliance.org. All sheriffs, marshals, and their deputies are to take a civics course, which are such as the free one at nationallibertyalliance.org. Ordered, all sheriffs and marshals are protected, all sheriffs and marshals are to protect the people's unalienable right of due process. Special considerations. Connecticut Constitution, Article 4, Section 25, requires the election of a sheriff every 4 years. Legislators, by act and referendum, had no lawful authority to abolish the sheriff, the only constitutional officer. The, quote, the legislature cannot alter the Constitution by an ordinary act, an act of the legislature repugnant to the Constitution is void. That's Marbury versus Madison, 1803. Therefore, until the law and thereby the sheriff is reinstated, state marshals are responsible to protect the Constitution above any order given by an elected official. And that's going back to Connecticut again. Still in Connecticut. The office of sheriff never existed in Alaska. Therefore, until a constitutional officer can be established, the Alaska state troopers are to keep the duties of sheriffs as law enforcers, not code enforcers, and are also responsible to protect the Constitution above any order given by any elected official. Ordered, legislators of Connecticut State and Alaska State are to remedy the elected sheriff predicament immediately. Ordered, news media under penalty of law, editors are ordered to perform their First Amendment duty and report and or print a copy for the people. Failure to do so, seeing you have a duty to inform, will be considered aiding and abetting the enemy. Questions concerning the common law may be directed to the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury by fax 888-891 8977, and we will respond forthwith by fax. Ordered under seal, dated May 20th, 2015, Grand Jury Foreman. That concludes the reading, page 22 of 22. Stewards of the Constitution, mandamuses to the county sheriffs. Any questions?
Thank you, Nikki.
You're welcome. That was longer than I thought, John.
Yes. You know, it's really fun for me to do this, and it's also fun for me to listen to you do this, that as the reader starts to get further into the document, it captures you, and you begin to get quite emotional about it.
Mm-hmm.
At any rate, that is part of what was done with the National Liberty Alliance at the very beginning. I have served both the Quo Warranto and the mandamus on many elected officials. And tonight we learned the broad nature, for some of you that have not yet actually sat down and read this document, how many public officials that we have notified, and the recurring themes about there has to be an oath, there has to be an affirmation, there has to be witnesses, there has to be documents, you know, all the things that are so repugnant to the Constitution that we suffer by. And we get a taste of what we'll be talking about next week, which is we'll be picking up, and we will continue on the theme of the sheriff, because the purpose is to help your committees of safety in engaging with the sheriff. And so that's why this document has a twofold purpose. So it is a little late, and I think we really should move on. But if there are some immediate questions or comments, I open the floor. Okay, everybody's asleep on the floor.